Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Fortcast, the official podcast of Fort Healthcare. I am your host, Dr. Michael Anderson, ENT doc, and current president and CEO of Fort Healthcare. I'm very excited for this podcast today because we have with us our special guest, our school nurse coordinator, Jennifer Koleski. Jennifer, thank you and welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So Jennifer, introduce yourself a little bit to our listeners. So tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been with Fort Healthcare, and what your role is within the organization.
I started in Fort Healthcare in the subacute department back in 2007, and then transferred down to the ER and urgent care, and was there for several years, and then joined the school nursing team in 2018.
Wow. And it's getting to be that time of year, I think, when kids get a little bit saddened and parents get a little bit excited, because we're going to talk a little bit about returning to school and kind of what that looks like for our school nurses. And what I'd like to start with, Jennifer, maybe you can tell us a little bit about Fort Healthcare's school nursing program. Like, how long has it been around and how many districts do we serve?
The school nurse program started in 1995 with the Fort Atkinson School District asking the hospital if they could get a school nurse when their nurse left. And then word of mouth kind of got around to other districts. And in 1997, we added Marshall, Cambridge, Deerfield, and Lake Mills. And then Jefferson in 99, Whitewater in 2002, Palmyra Eagle in 2016, and then Johnson Creek and Milton both joined us in 2020. So we have a total of 10 districts with about 15,000 students in 40 different school buildings, not including the buildings that house our special various 4K sites and alternative school options.
So is it safe to say that this is a robust school nursing program? I mean, to be involved in 10 districts in 40 school buildings, that is quite the program.
It is, and it's unique to Fort Healthcare. There's not other programs like this in the state of Wisconsin that are hospital-based.
Well, and just to extend that, when I talk to my colleagues around the country, there isn't a lot of school nursing programs that are done like this throughout the country. I do feel this is a very unique program specific to Fort Healthcare.
It is. I have found the same going nationwide as well.
So let's dive in a little bit. So the school nursing program, Jennifer, in your eyes, what are some of the big responsibilities that the school nurses take on as kids start to come back to school after, I'm sure, what was a wonderful summer?
I think as we try to get ourselves back into the swing of school, we want to make sure that people have taken advantage of summertime to get those well child visits, sports physicals, any immunization updates that are needed, forms that need to be filled out, and any updates they have for school sent in.
Yeah, I imagine sports physicals are a huge topic. Do the school nurses play a specific role in sport physicals?
This year, we have worked with clinics and our athletic trainers and marketing to get a 4-week block of time set aside. So each clinic would have 10 appointments per day from June 15th to August 15th in order to have people schedule those sports physicals along with a well child visit so that they can get updated on everything that they need, as well as make sure they can get in before the fall season starts.
You know, that's pretty remarkable. That's a great initiative. I mean, that just helps facilitate parents to getting their child in, because sport physicals, they need those forms signed. It's critical. As a parent of 3 kids in school, I'm very familiar with those forms. Jennifer, once a child is returning to school, I'd like to touch base a little bit on medications at school. When I think of school nursing, I think of the nurses and how vital they are to assisting kids with taking medications at school. Can you provide some insight into that for us?
So typically, anybody who is on medications, if it's possible that it be taken outside of school hours, we would ask for that. But Wisconsin law says that any medications that are given at school or at school-sponsored events must have parent or guardian written consent, and then all of those that are prescriptions or any non-FDA-approved medication like supplements or any over-the-counter medications that are given outside of the packaging directions need to have a provider signature as well. And so even if someone is carrying Tylenol or ibuprofen in their backpack, they still need to have a signed form for consent on file at school.
Gotcha. So you really have to have consent from the parent, but then also a form filled out by the physician or provider. Is that accurate?
Correct.
Okay. And then once those forms are completed, then a child can get their designated medication through the school nurse at a particular school.
Yes. We follow whatever the district policy is for medication administration or delegating that task to one of the assistants in the building as well.
Gotcha. So do the school nurses, do they ever get involved in immunizations? I know as young kids enter school, particularly in grade school, the earlier grade schools, immunizations are very important. Do the school nurses get involved in that?
Yes, we do. The state of Wisconsin requires all of the school districts to report by the 40th day of school the compliance rates for immunizations in all public schools. And so with that, we request that anybody who has been in Wisconsin prints out a copy of their WIR, or they're from the Wisconsin Immunization Registry, and sends that in to school. And anybody with outside of Wisconsin immunizations also, if they have a record, would submit that. And we have to have certain amounts of doses given and things like that in order to be considered compliant. Otherwise, students are excluded from school.
Really? So that's a very important point. So just to repeat that, if a child hasn't had a certain number of immunizations, then they may be at risk for not being able to go to school. Is that correct?
Correct. They could be excluded from school based on not having a record or any of those doses of medication. And those requirements actually changed in Wisconsin for the 24-25 school year. And so TDAP used to be required in sixth grade. That's now moved to seventh grade to better align with the student's age. And then the other addition is the meningococcal conjugate containing the serotypes of A, C, W, and Y. Those trade names are usually Menvio or Menquadfi. Those are required for admission to seventh grade, and then they are to be boosted with a second dose to 12th grade. And that's the change this year.
So this is coming down from Wisconsin's government, right? The state government. Is this coming from the Board of Education, or where does this come from?
This would be a part of one of the laws passed through the Department of Health Services.
Okay, so Department of Health Services keeps its finger on the pulse, and then it trickles down to the school districts. And then it sounds like the school nurses really just need to keep themselves informed of these changes as they come into effect.
Correct.
Okay. Well, that's important for parents to get those immunizations for their young ones. So moving on, Jennifer, are there some habits or some changes that parents should be aware of as their kids are getting ready to return to school? I'm thinking of routines or something like that as they enter back into school.
Yes, definitely. Summer is, as you mentioned earlier, a fun time, and there's a lot of times later bedtimes and sleeping in the morning. So as we get closer to the start of the school year, I think it's important to align our sleep patterns with the school day requirements. There's a lot of evidence about the good sleep hygiene habits being important both physically and mentally and improving productivity overall. So it's recommended that kids age 6 to 12 get 9 to 12 hours of sleep per night, and teenagers 13 to 18 get 8 to 10 hours of sleep per night.
That's a lot of sleep. And I know sleep hygiene is very, very important and needs to be a priority. We see this both in adult and pediatric care. And it's just something that we all need to be mindful that sleep hygiene is very, very important.
I agree. One of the things we try to let kids know about is the electronic devices with phones, tablets, video games, trying to not have those in the area where you sleep and turning them off a little bit earlier. We have had an increase recently in the past few years with students coming to the health room that are tired and requesting to take naps and rest because they're up late on their phones or playing video games. So any help with that is certainly appreciated.
You touched on something there, Jennifer. It's amazing the research that is emerging with screen utilization by kids of any age and their effect on sleep. It's really, I think, an emerging topic over the next 24 to 36 months as this research kind of comes to the forefront, that we as parents are going to have to be mindful of limiting those devices, particularly around bedtime, as they are very stimulating.
Yes, even in the nighttime modes or the light changing modes, that is found to be a disturbance.
And just to add that, certainly at the middle school and high school level, and I speak from experience here, it's amazing how often kids will send texts between 11 and 1 a.m. So we try to really encourage our kids, my own children, to put away their phones, put it in a drawer, leave it in the kitchen, because even if it's set on silent, you get that little tiny vibration on the nightstand, and that can be quite disruptive to somebody's sleep pattern as well.
Yeah, I usually say if it's necessary to have the phone nearby for an alarm, to put it on do not disturb or shut off any non-essential alerts, and then they wouldn't get those, just the alarm, but easier said than done.
It's not an easy thing to do, but I feel it's been very helpful in our own home. So switching gears a little bit, Jennifer, I want to talk about any particular students that may have chronic medical needs. How do the school nurses help those children with chronic medical needs?
So typically we know our students that are going to have those needs, and we have an emergency action plan for them, and we have the emergency medications that they may need. But the one thing we like to tell parents, even if there's been no change since last year's school year, with the new school year, we need all new orders and all new updates from the providers just to ensure that we have the most up-to-date information with any changes, and then we can update those plans.
Yeah, communication is critical, isn't it?
Yes, very much so.
Because our school nurses, they do such a wonderful job assisting families, in addition to the students themselves, with chronic medical needs. It's just really important that we keep information flowing, communication open with the parents, and I'm sure in many cases, the student themselves, as we deliver that care in the school setting.
And some of those diagnoses, parents may not think of being that critical that school knows about, or don't think that they should be telling us. But anybody who has any food or environmental allergies, we would want to know about any history of epilepsy or seizure disorders. Of course, those students with diabetes and asthma, and even mental health conditions, if there's a concern, we would want to know that so that we can make sure that we are providing for equitable education and making sure we're providing the supports needed that they can learn and continue to be in class just like all the other students in school.
Yeah, that's very well said. We're here to support not only medical needs, but also educational needs. We want to optimize our students to provide the best educational environment that they can experience.
Yes, part of our practice framework as school nurses is built on the mission of supporting students so they're healthy, safe, and ready to learn, so that they are ready to be in class at all times and making sure that they have the equipment and support that they need.
Absolutely. Very well said. And then an extension of that, Jennifer, as the fall enters and it gets a little bit closer to Halloween and Thanksgiving, we see an uptick in our respiratory sicknesses. So is there any advice that you have for parents or students in regards to when they're sick?
Yes. If your child is sick, we ask you to please keep them home until they're well enough to participate in class. Because if they aren't feeling well, they are getting nothing out of class, and then potentially spreading that to other students in the class as well. So we always recommend, often we collaborate with the Jefferson County Health Department and provide clinics right in the schools to administer flu shots. And we also recommend that, again, if they are sick, they just need to stay home.
Absolutely. So did I hear you correctly in that kids can get flu shots at school?
Yes. We typically work with the health department, and they will come in usually after school one afternoon, often aligned with when parent-teacher conferences are and things like that, because they do need the parental consent to get that. But we try to make it as easy as possible. If they're coming in for their parent-teacher conference, they can get their flu shot right there.
Well, that's wonderful to know. I mean, anything that we can do to minimize the impact of the respiratory season is very well received. So that's wonderful that that flu shot is available in the school setting. Well, Jennifer, I got to tell you, I learned a great deal in talking to you about the back to school measures as kids start to come back to school. And I want to thank you a lot for being part of this podcast today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So if you enjoyed this episode of The Fortcast, please share it on your social media channels. Once again, this is Dr. Michael Anderson saying thank you for joining us and have a great day. Take care.